Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, MJF against Samoa Joe for the AEW World Heavyweight title. Headlines Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York next week. I'm a little bummed out, I have to admit. I was trying to talk myself into Roderick Strong against MJF. Not because I don't want to see Joe MJF, because I think Joe MJF would be good to headline a pay-per-view. I think I'm a huge fan of Joe and really have thought he, he's had a good career. I thought he deserved an even better career than he's had in a lot of ways over the last 20 years. And, he deserves a showcase match. Next week, they'll have a big audience, and it'll be a showcase match. But I was looking forward to Roderick Strong and MJF going at it with Adam Cole, kind of caught in the middle with Taven and Bennett. So we had a lot of moving pieces here. It's not like things are over for Roderick Strong and his, unexpected surge as a character. And we also had maybe a hint of what the finish will be next week since Joe took out Adam Cole. Maybe next week Cole takes out Samoa Joe to help MJF win. Kind of an odd matchup. Fans chanting Joe, Joe, Joe at the end. MJF's the babyface, at least it seems. Fans are certainly cheering him. So from a character alignment standpoint, not super convenient with Joe just being Joe, but fans liking him and MJF kind of leaning babyface these days, obviously. Joel, what are your emotions? What are your thoughts coming out of this main event?
Yeah, Samoa Joe and MJF is a much more marquee matchup, and I thought that they did a great job making it feel something special, something big for the Grand Slam show next week. I thought that's what they did overall in the show. But yeah, I think that Roderick Strong's time will come to have another thing running with Adam Cole and MJF. But with everything that they built up with Samoa Joe before, at the All Out pay-per-view and then the events that followed there, that I just thought that this was the logical matchup to give for Grand Slam, and then you can continue on with what you're doing with Roderick Strong. But Samoa Joe is just really on, as you mentioned before, that he is finally getting his due, in a major promotion, in putting into a prime spot, getting this main event in New York City. It's going to be really big for him. And at the same time, Roderick Strong has finally found a character. He's always been known as a guy who's a great wrestler, great in-ring. You know that you're going to get a good match out of him, but he hasn't fully developed that character. And right now, he's found something that works for him. He's reminiscent to me as a Minnesota fan of the Kirko chains from last year, what we saw with Kirk Cousins, where he wears the glasses and stuff, and instead of the chains, he's got the neck brace on. And so it's been fun to watch what the way that he's developed here and really given something to those guys in the Kingdom and Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, two guys who have been kind of floating around after ROH as a separate promotion had dissolved, and now they've really found something for them. And so I'm curious to see what this leads to. I think that it's going to lead to an interesting finish, like you mentioned. How does Adam Cole play out with this? It seems that he may be getting played by both Roderick Strong and possibly MJF, but this story has taken a lot of different directions, and we'll see how this plays out.
What do you make of the Taven Bennett yelling at Cole when Cole came out, blaming him for the distraction that led to Strong comically and absurdly pretending that he tweaked his neck, and Taven and Bennett were saying it's because you came out and he turned his neck so sharply, and Taz is sort of vouching for that being a thing. And Shivani's like, yeah, I didn't see it that way. Come on. What are the different ways this could be going? I mean, is Cole in on it with them? Will that ultimately be the case where like that whole thing was a charade, or can this fit into a storyline where Cole eventually turns heel on MJF, but at this point he wasn't a heel, and doesn't make sense that he would be swayed by Taven and Bennett knowing ultimately that they were manipulating him because the footage is available? Like, how does this work out? How does this fit in?
I mean, isn't that the question here? You know, the biggest storyline here that I don't know if they have the ultimate direction, because as we mentioned with All In, that it just seemed like that was the moment where a big turn was going to happen. And now they've extended the storyline with Roderick Strong and now the Kingdom involved. And where is it all going to go? And I just can't see exactly how it's going to play out, because it just seemed to me that MJF just felt a little more kind of less of the your scumbag and just a little more heelish when he did that backstage interview with Rene Paquette. That it just felt like, you know, is Adam Cole getting played by both of these guys? And somehow it turns out that Adam Cole, you know, they somehow make him into the biggest babyface out of all of this. But right now, I just can't get a clear read on exactly what they're doing with that.
Yeah, and I don't need to know, but I want confidence that they know so that it all makes sense when it all plays out. And that's kind of the framing of my question. I'm just not quite confident that every chapter will make sense, considering it seems like they, you know, called an audible to extend this. And, I mean, you know, I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know how it should end. But MJF as a babyface and Cole as a heel with Bennett and Taven and Strong feels like the most logical. And I'm just trying to, you know, look at everything that's happening and go, can that eventuality make sense in retrospect with what the week by week story that's been told? And I don't think there's anything egregious that would prohibit that, but I hope that they don't get too cute for the momentary pop or the twist and turn, where then in the end it doesn't feel authentic. You know, it just sort of feels arbitrary. And so I'm just, you know, I just have high hopes for this. Like I do any storyline, you know, lower card, mid card, upper card. I want it to make sense. And it's not that this won't. And it can go other directions too. But please, whatever the result is, have it in mind now so what you do in the meantime makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of my same mindset with this, is that I hope that they have a good plan by the end of this. I really can't tell where it's going right now. But honestly, if I were to choose a direction for this, is that I think that having Adam Cole just align with the Kingdom and become heels, and it really get, because that would solidify MJF, that, you know, we've seen so many times where he's teased the babyface, and if we do another tease where he's really just a setup the whole time, I mean, man, it's going to be hard to turn him again later down the road. That's going to be hard to believe, you know, anything that he says is true. So I think that him as a babyface doing the your scumbag gimmick is working really well, and I think that it has legs to continue forward with it.
So lay out what you would – I mean, you sort of have, but lay out what you'd like to see come January for all the players involved in this right now. Like, is Strong like just a sidekick in a faction and not a serious player, and Joe's back in ROH, and MJF is what, and Cole is what? Like, what do you – that's a low bar. But, like, what do you hope for everybody involved in this? What do you think is the best alignment and landing place for them?
Yeah. As far as Samoa Joe, I mean, I would really like to see him continue to be in this role and to continue to be in this type of role and be that dominant type of guy that we've always known that he could be. But, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's the booker doesn't see it in him, an injury, I mean, injuries have plagued him so much from getting to that next level, that it would be really nice to just see him as one of those dominant kind of, you know, he's a fringe kind of, you know, he's top of the mid card. You know, he's kind of he can be in the main event at times. You know, he's one of their top guys. I think that he's very capable of doing that at this age, you know, with his name, his longevity. I think that he could kind of play that role over a lot of these other bigger guys that they've been trying to push. So he definitely can get some great matches out of people. You know, as far as the Kingdom and Mike Bennett and Matt Taven, I mean, I've never totally seen a whole lot in them as an act, but I think that what they're doing right now, just being a part by association of being a part of the this bigger angle, you know, has elevated them a little bit. But I don't see them as being, you know, top players. I don't see them as being you know, a main tag team on the roster. But I think that you can continue to do a type of story that revolves around Adam Cole, because there is the history with Ring of Honor, there is the history with the stuff that they did in NXT, that Roderick Strong could be, you know, at a little bit of a higher level. But, you know, it's really going to be contingent on him developing this character and what is the end game for this character, because it's really kind of built around this whole angle with Adam Cole. So does that morph into something else that's more sustainable outside of this story? And then for Adam Cole, I mean, there's just so many question marks too, where, I mean, the guy just sustained a very serious injury last year that put his career in jeopardy. And him, like with anybody else with the concussions, you always have that wonder that, you know, in an instant something could really change and they could be building something up for them and have major plans. But and I mean, that goes for any wrestler, but especially someone who has a history of concussions, that's something that's so serious, you know, over a leg or an arm injury, that it's hard to say, you know, how much they're going to get out of that. But I think that there's a lot of room to elevate him into being a bigger star, like people had thought when he came into the promotion, that he could be a top babyface, he could be a top heel, and I still think that there's room for him to do so. And then as far as MJF, I mean, the guy is already – he's hit that next level where when I watch the show, there's so many stars that they have, but MJF just seems to be on such another level, and it's beyond just holding that world championship. But he can just do it all with the ring, in the ring and on the microphone, all the little shtick that he does. I mean, you know, at All Out, you could just see, like, the crowd was just going nuts for anything that he did. He could just do any sort of movement. It's, you know – it's hard to compare him to The Rock at this point, but I mean, there are some Rock type things where it's like The Rock lifts an eyebrow and the crowd goes nuts. I mean, MJF, he just goes for the kangaroo type thing, or he does any sort of movement and the crowd goes crazy for it. And I think that, you know, as much as he may want to be a heel and want to do the heel antics, I think there's a level of that he still can do. He always can be true to that MJF type character. That's what got him to this place. But the crowd is always going to want to cheer him. And I don't think that's going to change unless he does something, you know, really, really despicable. But like I said, that's going to be very difficult to turn him in the future because you're just not going to have that trust and believability that he's genuine.
All right, excellent. Let's pause and formally introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls and emails. We also have an on-site correspondent scheduled to join us to tell us about a very small crowd in Cincinnati, unfortunately,
yes,
for AEW. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, the website pwtorch.com. And the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, where we go live with the stream about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. And also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show, our main regular podcast feed, not a live call-in format like this. Yesterday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me. We talked about the ownership change in WWE that became official earlier this week. And we talked about the CM Punk-less AEW landscape and much more. So hope you guys check that out. If you haven't yet, search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to this, the red logo show, but also the blue logo show that'll pop up to get all the content that we put out every week, including some classic interviews on a regular basis and other flashback shows too. The other voice you hear is Joel Donnell. He is a longtime contributor to PW Torch with a focus on AEW. Joel, great to have you back in the co-host spot tonight.
Yeah, it's great to be back here with you, Wade. I always appreciate it.
Great to have you. Are you feeling optimistic about the Timberwolves this year?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, not so optimistic about the Vikings this year, but, you know, the things that we've seen with Ant on the Team USA and, you know, hopefully Rudy can mesh a little bit better with Karl-Anthony Towns and the rest of the team. But, you know, my quick take on that is that I feel that, you know, at the end of the year, what we heard with that Chris Finch and other management there was saying that Anthony Edwards, you know, is their number one guy moving forward. And I think that making that pivot and centering everything around him, it gives me a lot of optimism in Minnesota. But as you know, that once a guy starts getting some traction nationally, the conversation all becomes, well, is Minnesota too small for him? Is he going to go to the bigger team? And, you know, that's just something we're going to have to deal with.
It's also what talk radio comes up with to talk about when there are games to analyze. You know, what will be you know, as far as that goes. We got him locked up. If we have a good team and surround him with a good team for the next 4 years, I don't think he's going to be itching to go anywhere else. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously there's history. There's history there. I was on a bike ride a few weeks back, and when he signed the extension, I looked in the sky, and there was an airplane pulling an Anthony Edwards sign behind it, which was unexpected. I didn't know that was happening. I was out in St. Paul and saw that. So, we're, you know, the Wolves are doing what they can to make Anthony Edwards feel like.
Yeah. So. I think that's the Alex Rodriguez, Mark Lurie effect, you know, is that they realize that those little things do matter. You know, when they were in Vegas, having Anthony Edwards on the Resorts World Hotel, you know, having all that stuff at Lord Fletcher's, you know, for the release of their jerseys, all those little things matter. And I think that they get that a lot better than Glenn Taylor did.
Absolutely. All right. So now we're done with Wolves talk, people. Don't worry. We won't.
Another time, Wade. Another time.
Yes. Another time, exactly. All right, so we welcome your phone call. If you watch Dynamite and have thoughts on the show, give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Got a lot more to talk about tonight's Dynamite, and we'll weave our way through various topics on the show as we progress here. But we're going to start with Grant in Detroit giving us a call. Grant, welcome to the show. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
So is it me or so? It's either two things: either everybody on the show is tweeners, or we just had a lot of heel matchups that was kind of confusing tonight. So, am I tripping?
Well, my assumption is that Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson and Claudio are essentially baby faces again. You know, I know they're in Cincinnati and Mox was going to get cheered, but we've seen some movement, you know, with Danielson opposite of Ricky Starks and Starks attacking him. I think we're heading towards BCC being exclusively matched against heels. Therefore, they can be themselves, but be baby faces and not undercutting baby faces who fans don't like as much as them. So we have that. I mean, Toni Storm, I think, is a de facto baby face at this point because she's just, you know, funny. And obviously, Saraya is acting like a heel. And, I mean, Brian Cage was a heel against Adam Page. Parker and Bernard were heels against Allen and Wayne. Jericho and Guevara, both whatever they are right now, but not contradictory. Joe's been more of a babyface than a heel. Well, I don't know, Joel. I mean, Joe's just sort of been Joe, too. You know, and that's probably where some of Grant is coming from. But Roderick Strong's been a heel, but he's also, you know, sort of like a comedy guy right now, who I think fans are getting a kick out of. But, you know, a kick out of booing, kind of like you get a kick out of booing Dominic. Joel, your thoughts on that, and then I'll go back to Grant for follow-up if he wants to, you know, kind of add to the list.
Yeah, Grant, you're not tripping. I mean, this is the same things that I've been noticing, so I'm glad that other people are kind of bringing this up, that, you know, there are a few different characters that, you know, it's just that they position them in different ways that, you know, they feel they can go either way. They can go face or heel with them depending on, you know, who they want to match them up against. But I think that there's a lot of wrestlers like the Blackpool Comic Club and Samoa Joe specifically that, you know, they I think those people want to play heel. I think that they naturally are able to play those heel characters really well, but the fans just respect their work so much that they're going to cheer them regardless. And so you kind of put them in positions where, you know, even though that they're going to be booed or they're going to be cheered against other heels, you know, or against baby faces. So they're just kind of going with that. I mean, Blackpool Combat Club, it's like, you know, is Jon Moxley a heel? Is he a face? You know, we just saw him face Orange Cassidy and, you know, where he was playing up more of that heel character because Orange Cassidy is very much a baby face. And, you know, now that we're in John Moxley's hometown in Cincinnati, he's more positioned as that babyface. And I think that that's just the direction that they're going to go moving forward with Bryan Danielson being back. And Claudio, you know, Claudio is still kind of playing more of that heel character against Eddie Kingston, especially next week. Eddie Kingston is going to get that huge pop. So we'll see if things change for Claudio, but definitely for Bryan Danielson and Moxley, I think that they're going to be baby faces moving forward. And like Samoa Joe, he's Joe, and people are going to like him, even though he's great at playing that heel character, giving that rear naked choke. I mean, that's part of his nature, and people are just going to like that.
I hope we are in a sort of realignment stretch in Tony Khan's booking scheme. I mean, he's got to notice attendance is down. You know, I know they're riding high off of Wembley Stadium, but, you know, small crowd in Cincinnati tonight, way down from last time. Our onside correspondent noted it's, you know, it's the smallest turnout. And he's been every Dynamite in Cincinnati so far. And, you know, at some point, you know, you got to decide why is that happening. And part of it is you have to take the wrestlers that fans like and have them wrestle people that fans don't like and give them that type of satisfying cheering, booing experience that it's not the only way to promote wrestling, but man, I think you're fighting a headwind when you put Moxley against a babyface and expect fans to boo Moxley. Same thing with Danielson. And to a degree, Claudio and Wheeler too. I mean, they're hard fighters. People respect them. You know, and I know the Eddie Kingston one, they kind of want to finish it out, and that's fine. I mean, I think they're kind of wrapping up. But also, just figure out what MJF's slot's going to be, what Adam Cole's slot's going to be. Obviously, Hangman Page is a babyface, and Swerve is the heel, and Brian Cage and Prince Don are heels. I mean, there's plenty of it on the roster. And the Bucks, you know, babyface is the way that they came to Hangman's defense. So have everyone act consistently in a way that would elicit the type of emotional response that you want in fans. And I think that will help them draw. I mean, I think people just want permission to be wildly into babyface, cheering the wrestlers they like. And I think that's a formula that works, and I think AEW's lost their way a little bit. Again, if you do it another way, in a really sports-like environment, and you set things up, you know, like New Japan during its peak, you know, stretches, of course there's other ways to do it. But AEW's not doing that. You know, that's not what they're doing. So I think they kind of need to align things and just let the stars be stars by consistently being in a certain role and not turning them. You know, obviously Christian Cage would be crazy to turn a babyface anytime soon. He's doing so great as a heel, but it also is sort of equally crazy to expect AEW fans to boo John Moxley. And I know some of this is Tony Khan just letting wrestlers do what they want in the sandbox. And, you know, I don't really trust Danielson's booking instincts. I think he's phenomenally talented, a smart guy, but, you know, letting him just indulge in what he wants to do at this stage might be something he's earned, but I don't think it's best for business. And so it might be more fun to be a heel, but it's not good for business. And those wrestlers have to look around at that crowd tonight and go, you know, some of this is on us because Tony Khan gives the top guys a lot of latitude to do whatever they want. And I don't know that there's an overall booking vision right now that is aimed towards fixing what I think is turning some people away who used to really be into the AEW product and were willing to buy tickets for the events. Joel, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have some very similar thoughts about that. That's like you wonder what is it that isn't feeling right about this promotion right now? Because when I do watch it, it's very clearly the secondary promotion. And there was at times in, you know, just a couple of years ago, maybe 2021, especially when they got CM Punk and they got Danielson, they got Adam Cole. I mean, they were really feeling like they were on fire and they were packing arenas and people were really excited and enthusiastic about the product. And there are still a lot of people who are very enthusiastic to watch Dynamite, watch Collision, watch Rampage and all the other shows that they're promoting all at once. But, you know, besides the oversaturation of the product right now, I think that really what it is it comes back down to that, you know, what are you and what do you want to be? You can't just be a little bit of something for everyone. I have not seen really anything that works well doing that, trying to be a little bit for everyone, trying to find that.
TNA tried that.
Yeah, I haven't seen in wrestling or really anything else in life. What is it that works that's trying to be something for everyone? That you have to define what your audience is and what you want to be. And, you know, you can't just be like a little bit of New Japan and a little bit of WWE and a little bit of whatever other promotions and a variety show of different stuff. You have to decide, you know, what it is. And the direction that they've taken is not the New Japan direction that people were hoping for, where you have, you know, you have a lot of tournaments. You have a lot of, you know, big matchups where the storylines aren't so much like this big story. It's not like they don't have like the Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, you know, big story with the big package like that and the guys doing the promo. It's more about that they are constantly, you know, they're always on their own story. They're always on their journey to win the championship, to win the IWGP championship. And then they have these different stories that carry on, you know, from the different wrestlers that they face, from the different tournaments to the big shows, and then in their tag matches, that they're constantly weaving back and forth with these different wrestlers, and then they're connecting those stories. So they may face somebody at one point, and then they, you know, then they move on to facing somebody else, and then they go back to that story that's between those two guys. It's not just the, this one big program, you know, that goes for, you know, however many matches. And so, but AEW has chosen this to be more like a WWE and more like a lot of these other American promotions that we've seen. And, you know, like I've heard it before is that a lot of like for American wrestling is that it's, we base everything off of what we've seen of Vince McMahon's vision and Vince McMahon's vision, and the way that WWE has presented professional wrestling. And I think that, what Tony really needs to do is think about, you know, what are the things that he likes in wrestling and, you know, the vision that he thinks is going to be very successful that's different from WWE, not the same thing. I mean, in any business, what they tell you is how you can beat your competitor is find ways of how you can be different. You know, obviously they're going to be similar in wrestling, that there's going to be similar things. But you have to find out what is that identity. And right now they're just pulling so many different things of the backstage segments, feel like they're, you know, a WWE light version. And I think that, you know, what you mentioned about the characters as well is that you want to have people who have an emotional investment in who wins and who loses. And right now there's just so much of like, wow, that's going to be a great match. I know who's probably going to win and it's probably going to be really entertaining. Hopefully it's a 4-star plus match, but there's not as much investment in who's actually going to win. And then that's them winning or losing is going to have consequences from there, whether they move up or down the card. A lot of guys just feel very stagnant, where it's like, you know, who needs the win more? You know, when I look at a match like Hangman Page versus Strickland, it's like both those guys need a win. They both need a win, and they both need to move up. And so it's very difficult, you know, to book something like that. And so a lot of times the result that happens from it is that neither guy gets over. You know, where it's a kind of a screwy finish or it's an interference by somebody. And I just don't think that type of stuff helps the product at all.
Grant, thanks for holding on during our response to your initial question and topic. anything you want to add or respond to there?
No, I wanted to add, like, I mean, you did bring up Claudio, but it was like, that's confusing because, all right, he's babyface in one segment. Very next segment of Eddie Kingston, he heel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, that stuff like that is just confusing. Like I would like for them to just define some of these roles better. And like you said, maybe if we do get that, maybe, you know, attendance will get better and some of these stories will be a little bit more cohesive. Like Swerve and Hangman, that's so, Lisa, you got a clear heel, clear baby face, and it's just some of these other stories would make a little bit more sense if we got that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, people don't always know why they're inspired to go to a live event or not, or skip one. You know, it sometimes it's intangible. It's just a gut feeling, and it, getting people to leave the house and spend money, buy a ticket ahead of time, or go at the last second, it comes down to some things that AEW isn't doing right now that if I'm Tony Khan, I develop a strategy for the rest of this year and going into next year to change some things. And part of it is what we're talking about here, having more clearly defined roles for wrestlers. So fans, so viewers, feel emotionally invested in either rooting for or against them. And then, you know, I mean, there's so many other factors too. This is, it is not just that, you know, there's too many titles. The stakes don't feel as high when, you know, Orange Cassidy loses an international title and now he eyes an FTW title. It's just like, you know, bouncing one title to another, one take title to another, one company to another. It's just, there's a lot of, I mean, it just, Jason Paul and I talked about it yesterday. It just, Tony Khan feels like he's spread thin. There's a lot of hours of programming to fill, plus ROH, adding pay-per-views, and it still feels like a company that's letting the high-paid veteran wrestlers play in the sandbox however they want, regardless of whether it fits a larger vision of Tony Khan, and a company that is built around more dream matches than storylines. Now, I hesitate to say that because, I mean, there's a lot of storylines right now in AEW. I mean, it is not just, oh, this would be a great match. I mean, there was a time where that was more the case, and it's not. But there's also the aspect where I just think they're alienating some of the fan base. When you say, you know, Ibushi's going to be the next target of Takeshita, but you don't tell the viewers what the backstory in Ibushi and Omega is or remind them or highlight the aspects of it that matter most, I think some fans are like, God, I just don't know if this company's for me. I feel like I'm joining a TV series in the middle, and where can I go back at the beginning and find out why I should care about these people? And Tony Khan books for himself and the rabid fans on social media too much sometimes. Joel, do you agree with that premise?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things is, like, they need to – it feels like such a promotion that, you know, and this is a good thing to an extent, is that it's booked so much for the wrestlers to enjoy themselves, to have fun with a lot of things. And I think that it needs to have more of a narrowed focus, where I think of, you know, you'd mentioned that they need to talk more about, you know, how is it Kota Ibushi important? Why is this a big deal that he's going to be facing Takeshita? And I just go back to, you know, one of the segments that they had with Daniel Garcia and Don Callis. And it's like, why did they even have that segment backstage? That was just, I'm sorry, a waste of time to even have that of him getting in Don Callis's face, and Don Callis goes after him, says, we need guys like that. And it's like, you could have taken that time to talk about something that's more important, you know, and building more importance. And having importance means that there's going to be a scarcity of certain things, and it's going to be their scarcity of time on the TV show. And you can only talk about so much stuff. You can only feature so many people to make them important. But if everybody has a championship, they're going to be less important, you know, in these different segments. Like, you want to make all this stuff really important and not just have filler on there. Like, there's so many more creative ways that you can find to make things more important or give it more depth within the show. And it just needs to have more of, you know, it just needs to be more reined in that way. And right now it's just that there's so many different shows. Like I mentioned, like right now, I mean, it's like they got four different shows that they're promoting matches for, with Rampage, Collision, Grand Slam, Wrestle Dream. And granted, I think that they've done a really nice job on this show promoting Grand Slam and making that feel like a really special show next week. And also Wrestle Dream, they've made that feel like a different type of show, that I think that this is definitely a roadmap for how they can build two major shows at once, that the both feel like they have important matches, but they're also very different matches that they have on there. So, but it just needs to have a more narrowed focus and making things feel more important, which is going to be having less, you know, less time for people to go out there, less of the, you know, kind of funny segments out there that are just kind of feel like filler on there, and just finding a more narrowed focus and highlighting things that are important.
All right, very good. Grant, anything else that you want to add before we move on?
No, that's all I have for tonight.
All right, great. Thanks. Appreciate it. Good topic to discuss. Can branch out a lot of different ways there. Our number, if you want to be next, is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. 347-215-8558. I want to read an email from Zach in Texas a little earlier than normal. He says, gentlemen, I enjoyed all of tonight's show, but the clear highlight was MJF cutting his version of the Steiner Math promo. Yes, I know the Steiner Math promo was a TNA thing, but I struggle to imagine the majority of the crowd hasn't seen a clip of it online somewhere. Anyway, MJF nailed it perfectly. It popped me to no end. Now about this Christian and Luchasaurus versus Darby and Sting match. Excalibur didn't confirm that Tony Khan made the match, which is usually what happens. Is there a chance that Sting won't be able to make it, whether it's because of Christian or something else? And Darby surprises Christian with Adam Copeland as his replacement partner. I enjoyed the close of the show probably more than I should have. Roddy flopping down and faking a relapse of his neck injury to milk sympathy from Cole had me cracking up. And then they ended the show with Joe looking like an absolute psychopath. Perfect end to the show, and it set the table for next week. Three main topics in there. Let's hit each of them here. Joel, MJF, I thought cut a good promo. I liked, we recorded last week. He had this week off. But last week he's like, hey, I know who it's going to be. It's going to be Strong or Joe. And he cut a promo about Strong and he cut a promo about Joe. And I don't think what he said tipped off what the outcome was going to be. It seemed like a genuinely somebody who didn't know who was talking about each situation. And the mask thing was fun. I think it was also sort of making fun of WWE when they have triple threat matches and say, hey, each person has a one-third chance to win, as if every betting line in every sport is always 50-50 because everybody's got an equal chance to win, which is so absurd. WWE's been better about it, but we'll still give them a hard time about it. Joel, what'd you think of MJF?
Yeah, my thoughts are the same on that. That I thought that he gave equal time to both guys. He went a little long with the math promo, but he definitely didn't tip his hand. Not knowing who his opponent was going to be, he didn't just focus solely on Samoa Joe or solely on Roderick Strong. That I like that aspect of it, that it's not just leaning in one direction or the other. And the math promo, it was fun. It's just MJF. He's doing it all right now. He's trying to do a lot of different things because everything he does gets over at this point. So it was just fun to see something different.
Okay, so number two, he brought up Christian. I do not think Edge will show up under those circumstances. Adam Copeland will. I think we're going to get Sting. I can't recall if Copeland's deal is even up quite yet. I know he had his last match. And I don't know if he has a non-compete. I think I knew that back when the SmackDown happened, and I've kind of forgotten. But my inclination is to think he won't even be cleared quite yet. But I will say I could be wrong on that.
Heard or what I've seen is that, and what do I know? But I just saw it online that he's been removed from the internal active roster. So for whatever that's worth, I don't know what that totally means. You'd know better than I would.
Yeah, I mean, that just means they're keeping up on the list of wrestlers who are options to book for future shows. It doesn't mean that he's available to show up for AEW. I mean, it would be a big pop. It would be, a big moment, show up opposite.
Yeah.
I think when you lose CM Punk, you want to gain some talent. You want to look around and you've got, there's a lot of legal fees that they're going to be spending money on, but I think, the roster has space for a big name or two, and Edge would be more of a nostalgic name. And I sort of feel like it could get in the way of what Christian is doing. I think, Christian has been in Edge's shadow a lot and he's not in his shadow right now. And if you bring Edge in, it sort of all of a sudden becomes about Copeland instead of Jay. So I'm hesitant for that, but I do think Edge would bring some people over with him, some eyeballs. And we saw the reception in Toronto for him. I mean, people see him as a really big star who's still got some gas in the tank. So I like that. I mean, I would take Drew McIntyre as a heel in a second because Drew's still in his prime and they could use a big, oversized for the roster heel. I think there's some really good money matchups with a Drew McIntyre with a chip on his shoulder going, you chose Roman over me. You chose Cody over me.
Yeah.
You chose Seth over me. Let me show you what a mistake that was. I just think he's wired to show up and be kind of the opposite of CM Punk in a lot of ways. And this will sound like I'm taking digs at Punk, but I just think it's factual. Punk was older and more worn out, more injury prone. He was more prickly and had a chip on his shoulder and baggage that dragged things down. Even when he was right, people resented him for how right the way he expressed himself when he was critiquing other people or things going on in the company. And he, obviously has a temper. They're telling a story that Drew, has a short fuse, but that's, storyline for all we know. So to me, if I take Drew over Copeland as an acquisition for the company, if that, but that can't happen until next year.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I like that. But if you add Drew and Copeland and you have Jade Cargill back and you start utilizing the Bucks better, and Don Callis better and Miro better and Samoa Joe better and Ricky Starks better. Oh, and Hangman Page better. I mean, all of that, I think you can start drawing better again. You know, I think they started this whole big picture thing too, but I think they lost their focus on who their top stars were. And I think what's first said last week resonated with people. I think people were nodding along going, yeah, I mean, whatever the reason was, injury and fatherhood and all this stuff going on with Hangman, I think the broad image people had, it rang true. This guy's friends with the EVPs, and he seemed sort of content and not hungry anymore. And I think that's how the Bucks come across. I think Kenny, to a degree, even when he delivers in the ring, comes across as someone who's like, I got my money and I put in my time and my body hurts more now. It's kind of like Danielson is talking about, you know. His body hurts after big matches. And right. AEW has a lot of aging talent. You want to use them sparingly. But you bring in Copeland and use them sparingly, there's a downside it might overshadow Christian a bit. But if you bring in Drew and he becomes a Moxley-like workhorse who just wants to be out there every week putting on a show, that can make a real difference. So anyway, I'm kind of broadening out the topic from his point. Anything you want to say on any of that, Joel?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, it brings up a lot of interesting possibilities there, where that's kind of where I was going with that, too, is thinking about that if Drew were to come in, you know, he wouldn't be that massive needle mover like CM Punk was that he was such a star that people wanted to see it had been so long before he had seen him. But he'd be more along the lines of someone like a Moxley, where they were just, they're so on the fringe of getting to that main event level, and they want it, and they're hungry. Like you said, I mean, that's kind of the thing that they really need is some guys who are hungry for that top spot, that a lot of guys feel content, that they are, you know, they're satisfied with the matches they've had. They've had a lot of really great star-rated matches. They've, you know, been in these great venues that AEW has gone to. They've been high profile. They've done what they want to do, cut the promos that they want to do, and they're very satisfied from there. Whereas you see like a guy like Ricky Starks, he hasn't had that top spot yet, and you see that the hunger in that guy, that he really wants it. He wants to be the guy at the top of the card, and they need to bring in more people like that, you know, who are ready to be stars. And Drew McIntyre is somebody who's been around in several different promotions, and he even had his first run WWE, you know, left there, did the independent scene, went to Impact, really started to build up his name, and went back to WWE, where he knows what it takes to be a star at a high level. And I think that he would have a lot of motivation to do that. Whereas Edge at this point, I mean, the question really is like, what is he looking to get out of a run in AEW? I mean, he's had a full career. I mean, he's had a full career where he could ride off into the sunset and, you know, he's WWE Hall of Fame or whatever Hall of Fame you want to put him into. He's done it all at this point. And so is it to just, you know, get in the ring with some of these other guys? You know, how many more matches does he have in him? Is he going to be motivated to wrestle at a high level now going to the secondary promotion? There's a lot of question marks there. And I don't think that he by any means is going to be the type of needle mover that CM Punk was, that I think, you know, people are going to be interested to see him and see him in a different context after only seeing him in WWE. But, you know, what is he going to be looking to get out of that? And so I'm just very curious, you know, who are some of the other big names that AEW can bring in, because they had really built their company for the first few years off of just who's going to come in next, who's going to be the big name to come over into AEW, and they got several people to do so. And, you know, outside of Drew McIntyre, who you brought up, I mean, I'm just not sure who else is going to be that huge, huge pop who's realistic, who's where it's really, there's a possibility of it happening. You know, you can scratch off Roman off that list. You can scratch Seth off that list. You know, I'm curious, like someone else who's like Drew, who else you could bring over there? I mean, does anybody else come to mind?
I mean, a Becky Lynch, a Charlotte Flair, you know, maybe a top.
But are those realistic? Like, could you actually see that happen?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm not trying to – I'm not breaking news. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, someone's contract comes up, they feel underappreciated, underpushed, and they wait it out. It's kind of what's going on with Drew. You know, Becky popped a big rating for NXT last night, just a huge, huge surge in viewership for NXT, the closest NXT's ever come to Raw's rating. It's just crazy. And WWE ought to recalibrate, you know, whether they want to start, you know, figuring out a way to push her more and feature her more. Not that, you know, I mean, I think they thought they were with the Trish feud, because Trish is, you know, big name from the past. But anyway, but you know what? If I'm AEW, I mean, you've got to work under the assumption that you will not acquire any established names from WWE.
Yeah.
and have your game plan to build from within, but pick the right people. Building from within can go, you know, it isn't guaranteed to work if you don't protect them and feature them as stars and have titles that matter or journeys that matter and defined characters, and you don't, you know, do too much distraction finishes. You know, I mean, we had two matches in a row with the exact same thing happening with Swerve and Christian, where the babyface turned their back and the heel got the advantage. And, you know, there's a levels of attention to detail. I mean, there's so many things AEW needs to be doing, not, as opposed to trying to recreate the Adam Cole, Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, you know, inflection of new names. So do things that way, the right way, and build from within. And I think they'll be better off than sitting around waiting for that opportunity to sign somebody like Drew. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. We kind of talked about the main event already, Zach, so we won't get too much into that. That was his third point, just how he enjoyed it more than he felt he should have. But yeah, we let off the show with that. All right, so we'll go next to James in Clemson. James, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you. Joe from New York, you are on deck, by the way. James, what's on your mind about Dynamite?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Joel. I'm really enjoying the conversation that you guys are having about, like, what exactly it's going to take to get AEW to the next level. And just to kind of change the perspective on it a little bit, like, I think a lot of it has to do with Tony Khan and, like, his, like, just the venues he books, the way he does his pay-per-views, just his business models in general. So, like, it starts with Chicago and Las Vegas and running these shows year after year and burning these markets out. And it's, you know, especially Chicago, you hear about how, like, the enthusiasm is basically gone in Chicago. And then, like, All In and All Out, like, I didn't buy All Out. I spent $50 on All In, but I didn't feel like it was worth it to spend $50 on All Out. And judging by the numbers, that 200,000 by All In and 100,000 by All Out, that tells me that 100,000 people were in the same boat. Yet Tony Khan's there just like touting it as this huge success, you know, whereas, like, you know, he could have had 200,000 people buy All Out and it would have been an even bigger success. So, like, and then I think the most frustrating part of all that to me was, like, in the media conference afterwards, he's saying, like, yeah, I really like traditions, and so I just want to keep making traditions, so we're going to do this next year without even, like, analyzing the situation or anything like that. It's just immediately, we're going to do it next year, you know? And so, like,
well, I think some, and not to cut off your momentum here, James, but some fans have a tradition too, which is they buy All In, but they don't buy All Out. So, you know, you might want to not talk up tradition, because if the fans follow a tradition next year, All Out's going to do more, fewer buys than it ought to if it were spaced out better.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. And I was honestly kind of disappointed when they said they're going back to London next year too. And I'm just like, why don't you try another market? Like, yeah, it may be a success, but, you know, like, maybe try somewhere else and have another success somewhere else. So it's just a lot of the things he does, I feel like they have not traditionally been good practice in history, and he doesn't seem to really learn from history when it comes to that stuff. So, yeah, I just want to know what you guys kind of think about that as far as Tony Khan goes.
Yeah, Joel, I'll throw to you first on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the obvious things that we've seen with Tony that's just was really bizarre is the official announcement of having All In returning already for next year without really analyzing the business of the fallout from that and having All Out that week afterwards. That, you know, I mean, it did okay for business, you know, it's one of their lowest, their pay-per-view buy rates. And, you know, the attendance was fine. I mean, I was there in person and, you know, it wasn't what it was, you know, for some of the other shows. It was at the United Center, which is a much larger venue than the Now Arena, so they're able to get more people into this arena. They had about, you know, 10,000 or so, 11,000 for All Out. And, you know, the enthusiasm was still there, but you're seeing in some of the other markets, too, of just continuing to run there and continuing to do a lot of the same things without, you know, analyzing how it's doing. And I think that he shouldn't just commit to we're always going to do this. We're always going to, you know, keep the tradition. And I know I've heard that he's resistant to doing it because the other lesson from wrestling history is switching that market, you know, that they talk about Starrcade and switching to a different market for that and how that hurt their business. And I think Tony is kind of leaning a lot on that, is that he wants to, you know, rely on a lot of these same markets. And, you know, I did some research as far as Cincinnati, and they've run Cincinnati, Ohio 4 times, and they've run the state of Ohio 11 times in their company's history. You know, compared to, you know, a place like Minnesota, they've ran it twice. You know, that there's other places that they can go to where people are going to be very enthusiastic for the product, but he keeps relying on kind of the same places. And I think it's, you know, a lot of it that I've heard is based on the metrics of, you know, the viewership of the show. But I think that you need to expand more and really analyze and be nimble. You know, you can't always just stay the same course with things, you know, because how much are they going to draw next year for All In? I mean, who knows? I have no idea if they're gonna ticket demand's gonna be even higher because people are gonna be so excited about this show, or if they're gonna say, yeah, we've seen it. You know, we got our chance that we wanted to see the big AEW show, and now we've seen it, so we're not gonna make that trip. You know, from wherever else in Europe to get to London. You know, so I think there just needs to be a lot more analysis, and I just know from being in business myself that you need to be nimble and you need to be analyzing these things and making adjustments. It's not always making drastic adjustments or staying the same, but it's always trying to better yourself and think about, you know, different ways that you can, you know, make those changes based on the analysis, based on the tracking, and based on those numbers. And, you know, obviously from All Out was not the success that it has been in the past. And I think that, you know, running it back to back again next year, I mean, we're going to run into the same problems unless he, you know, figures out a way to better book both those shows, to you know, promote things for the pay-per-views well in advance and not just, you know, the week before or 2 weeks in advance. I think that there those types of lessons he needs to learn from it and make those adjustments.
You know, James brought up, you know, Tony talking about tradition, and, you know, I kind of, you know, quipped, you know, if he does the same thing next year, the fans' tradition is going to be to buy All In and not All Out. I want to broaden that out. There's a lot of people who have been buying every AEW pay-per-view who did not buy All Out. Tony Khan snapped a tradition by running back-to-back shows with a relatively weak main event, a lineup that was patched together at the last second that did not have what they expected to have, which was CM Punk against Starks and MJF against Cole. You know, that would have been a strong lineup. And I understand there were some things that happened out of Khan's control and a tough decision made to probably, I don't know for sure, but probably delay. I don't know for sure Cole MJF was locked in, but certainly that's where things were pointing in terms of how do we turn this around? Well, we'll do an angle that leads to a rematch. And we didn't get that either. So there, you know, it was a tag match and a international former All-Atlantic title main eventing. It's just, yeah, I mean, so now a bunch of people who used to buy everything are not completists anymore. And does that break a tradition that's going to make it hard to get them back, especially when you insert WrestleDream into the mix before you get to the other main pay-per-views that have already been established? I just, sometimes, you know, it's not, you know, you talk about, you know, you have to adjust and change as a business and all that. Sometimes when things are going well, you don't want to screw it up by getting greedy. And I don't know if greed is the word, but, you know, or too aggressive. And adding pay-per-views to the schedule, especially back-to-back, like All In and All Out, and then sort of a niche one that's more towards the dream match, you know, I mean, there's not really a clear stated, obvious reason WrestleDream exists in the AEW TV universe. It's just another name of a show that is getting in the way of the cadence of what fans have grown used to. So I do worry, James, that the tradition for a third or, you know, 20, 30, 40% of AEW fans is going to be like, well, I was ordering pay-per-views every single time, and now I'm going to pick or choose thanks to the All In, All Out 8-day period. James, back to you.
Wade, yeah, I'm absolutely in that boat myself. Like, I bought every single pay-per-view since the very first Double or Nothing, and now, like, I'm contemplating, do I want to buy WrestleDream or not? And it's exactly for the reasons you said. And when this company started, like, the Cody and Dustin Rhodes match at the very first Double or Nothing, I like to think, like, is the match that made me a fan again, you know? And there's just something to that match with all the years of story and the way it was wrestled. And I was like, if this is what this company is going to look like, I'm all in. You know, I've always been kind of leaning more towards the WWE style. But Joel, you know, you mentioned that like if they would have went more the New Japan route. And I think that route would have appealed to me too, you know, because it kind of is a style that just, like, it's something for that everyone can love. Like, no matter what your style of wrestling is, you can find something you like in that. I really do just wish they would get their get things back on track. WWE is definitely doing it, and I love AEW. I've loved them since the beginning, and I just want to see them get there. I have another topic, but if you guys want to say more on that, feel free.
I don't really have anything else to say. I think you've spoken words that I think AEW needs to hear. Joel, do you want to add anything to that?
No.
Yeah, so go ahead, James, with your next topic. Yeah, go ahead, James. We can't hear you. James, can you hear me, Joel?
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
James, come on.
James, you said you had another topic, and you're muted. Or something. All right, I'll put you on hold. We'll go back to you. So hold tight if you can't hear us and we just can't hear you. Let's go to Joe in New York next. Joe, welcome to the show. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Yes, I was very impressed with the ending of the show with Samoa Joe. But before I get to that, let's just go back to the business of AEW for a second. This company is about to turn 4 years old in October, okay? And they cannot draw 1 million viewers. They're stuck in the 800,000 to 870,000 views, and they don't seem to have any clue or idea how to make it better or change anything. They change nothing. They continue to do the same thing week after week, and nothing changes. Look at the fact that this company, first of all, the first thing they should be doing is trying to get these pay-per-views on a streaming service like HBO Max for $10 a month.
Yeah.
It's 2023. Nobody would care. You could run a show every week. I mean, you can't, but you could run a show every other week, and nobody would care if they were paying $10 compared to $50. But the fact is, the other mistake they make, they don't use the East Coast. Look at WrestleMania. It sold out so quickly. One of the reasons why, it's in Philadelphia. So Boston, New York, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., they could all go. They could they could fly. They could travel. They could go by car. It's easy, or big sections of the country can get there easy. It's an easy weekend. AEW, they hang out in Chicago, which is great, but it's like you're shutting out the East Coast and the West Coast. They're not going to always go to the middle of the country like that. You got to go to, you know, do that in the West. You got to do that in the East. These are big markets that they don't touch. They come to New York twice a year.
Yeah, Joel, what do you think about what Joe's bringing up? I mean, there's a big part. There's lots of parts of the country that it seems AEW doesn't focus on as much or as often. I know they, you know, made their visit to Canada. They're going to Seattle. They've done some West Coast, some East Coast stuff, but it does seem they're a little bit more. You know, man, I'd be interested in a infographic showing all the places they've been. And maybe even color-coded per year to see, you know, someone do that. Somebody likes that kind of thing.
Oh, I'll find some time, and I'll probably look into that more.
That
stuff interests the hell out of me. Like, that's why I was looking at Ohio, because I'm just like, my God, I feel like they've been in Ohio so many times. And, yeah, that's why I said they've been there. They've had 11 different events, including a house show in Ohio. And I was like, man, because they've run Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Troy, Ohio, Toledo, Ohio. That's the show upcoming is going to be in Toledo, Ohio. I'm someone who will never advocate for less events of AEW in Chicago because I typically try to go to those. It's a nice drive. And yeah. But they have hit the other places in the country. I mean, they're going to go to Los Angeles for Full Gear this November. I remember last year for Revolution, they were in San Francisco. They were in, Las Vegas for Double or Nothing,
yeah.
Canada so in for Forbidden Door. So, they get around to different places for some of their big events. They try to get around the country. But, there's still several states that I can't even remember the last time they visited it. Like I said, in Minnesota, they've only come here twice. And that's like, it feels like, man, this should be like a main place for them to come to. And they just don't, and same thing with Wisconsin. I mean, they've only had, I think, two shows there before. So there's several different spots around the country. And I'd like to know what factors into where they do go. Because I know in this part of the Midwest, this is a big wrestling town, that there's the wrestling shows that come here, they always do well for attendance. So I'd love to see a metric, of where they go and why, if there's any reasoning for the time of year that they go to a certain place. Like we were just talking about for All In, that he's going back to All In because it's a bank holiday again. But it's like, man, wouldn't All In work so much better at a different time of the year, and just not, not have it going into the Labor Day or switching the Labor Day thing, but he wants to keep that as a tradition. So couldn't you find something else for All In and not being in late August? You could do July, you could do February, you could even do January, any other time. I'd be very curious to see, where how many times they've been to all these different markets and what really goes into the calculus of all that.
I think they do look at local cable numbers. They get kind of the market by market breakdown and stuff, and that determines things. But, do you want to burn out a hot market or go to a market that isn't as drawing the same viewers but is hungrier for a live event because they haven't spent money on you lately? And, that might be something they want to change their policy on a little bit. Go ahead, Joe.
So, someone needs to tell Tony Khan he's not going to get a $1 billion TV contract getting 800 to 870,000 viewers every week. That's just not going to happen. You're not going to get a $1 billion contract like that. You don't deserve it. Now, the company's not a failure. It's not a failure 4 years in, but I think it's safe to say now it's a major disappointment because AEW fans like to say they long-term book. They don't long-term book. First of all, they don't build stars. They don't, like MJF, his title reign is disappointing, not because of him. They don't build his matches. They don't build his contenders to anything. Look, I mean, this stuff with Adam Cole is actually the best work I ever seen Adam Cole do because I was down on him from the day he got into AEW. I didn't watch NXT, and I was not impressed with anything he did up until this MJF stuff. Before that, the only thing that impressed me about Adam Cole was that he had Britt Baker for a girlfriend. So, I mean, that's basically how I felt about him. But he showed me something here. That he could be a player with in the business, doing what he's done in this storyline so far. But they might burn it out because I don't think they know what they're going to do going forward with it. But one more thing.
Joel, do you want to respond to that?
Good.
Anything you want to add to that, Joel, or react to?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, my gripe is that sometimes I feel like we talk about long-term booking, and sometimes I feel like they take too long to get to something. That it feels like, man, they just need to get to it and move on to the next thing. But really, you were talking about, Joe, is actually building up contenders. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the early days of AEW is that you could always look forward to what the next big show is, and you could imagine what some of those matches are because they had laid down the foundation for that. Like the first few title defenses and the first few, the champions for the AEW, and then the main events and stuff, you could really start to think about I could see this match happening because they've laid this down and then they've also set this down and then this could happen. Whereas right now it's like, I mean, sure, anything can happen, but there hasn't been that foundation where you're really looking forward to it and speculating on it, and it makes logical sense. I mean, yeah, sure, we can get Bryan Danielson versus Zack Sabre, but it just, you know, it kind of came out of the blue here because Bryan Danielson said he's running out of time, you know, and I wish that there had been a little bit more of a story to speculate when that could possibly happen and just build that up a little bit more. And I feel like that's another element that's really missing from AEW.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe. I know you had something else ready to go.
Yes, just with the way the show ended with Samoa Joe, I really think this guy, you got to consider giving him a run with the title, with the AEW title, because I just love the way he attacked at the end. It was so believable. Like, that's old school wrestling. You attack the guy at the end, beat him up, you leave him on the ground. That's just like heelish, but that's what they need, a spark, a guy with energy and intensity. Like, that AEW needs something. They need a spark. It's kind of a flat company, even though they try to go 100 miles an hour. The way they do it, they lose your interest in it. They just don't, you know, keep you locked in week to week because of the way they present their TV, especially Dynamite.
Joe, as champion, Joel, what do you think?
I mean, I'm not going to shut down the idea at all. I mean, I've really liked the work that he's put in recently. I mean, just right now in the story and the context of all this, it doesn't seem like the next big chapter for them. But I mean, if things were set up differently, I mean, absolutely. I think that you could do something with Samoa Joe. If you frame him the right way, you build to him. Right now, I feel like, you know, there's been some build just because of Collision for him. And now he's getting a little bit more of a push because of everything that's happened with CM Punk. So if there was more of a foundation to that, I certainly would be all for that.
I don't want to interrupt MJF's title reign because I think it's one of the better things potentially that AEW has and just as is. But having Joe win a national cable contemporary world title and having a run with it and being a badass and using it, you know, using what he does well on a stage like that and just shaking things up a little bit too. I mean, I am an advocate for MJF being a centerpiece, babyface or heel, and choose one and stay in that lane. But there's something about sort of maybe shaking things up a little bit. You want to be dangerous. You want to be careful about it. It's dangerous to do things arbitrarily. But there's something about just wanting to get past this era that has, I think, been a disappointing stretch for AEW in certain categories. Yes, All Out was a very well-reviewed show, but a lot of problems with it also. From a business standpoint and a timing standpoint, maybe Joe is champion, just plowing through some people and then, you know, shaking it up by having, you know, some different people go after him, would just sort of tell people something new is happening here. We're shaking things up a little bit. I just, when you're drawing a much smaller crowd in Cincinnati and viewership is down, I mean, I think Collision did on the higher end of my expectations last Saturday without Punk up against College Football. But NXT viewership is up. I know Raw had like the lowest viewership ever, but it was like this aberration of a football game too. So I think before we draw too many conclusions, we want to see what happens the next couple weeks with Raw. And they didn't exactly put a monster lineup out there. But I mean, most signals to me would say shake things up for the sake of shaking things up. And we're doing some of it just because Hangman is back engaged again. It's, you know, being an engaging, fired-up character. Swerve is getting the push that I think people have wanted for a while. Joe's getting a push. CJ Perry, Alana's back with, you know, in a storyline with Miro. Ricky Starks is finally getting a push. I think they're doing some good things. But, you know, I mean, taking the belt off of MJF just to send a message we're doing something different. And if you tuned out because you – whatever it was, it wasn't doing it for you, what we're doing before, we've changed things even at the very top. Check out what we're doing. I don't think Joe's a bad choice in that regard. Joe, back to you.
Final point. Do you think AEW has a backup plan if WarnerMedia walks away from them? Because I don't think they're going to get the big one from them. So if they walk away, where does this go? Does it go to a streaming service? I mean, I don't see it. And that's dangerous if that happens.
Yeah.
Because then you just Ring of Honor. The original Ring of Honor, not the stuff that they own today. But that's dangerous. I don't think Tony Khan has the big picture. I don't think he's – first of all, that All In should be every other year. If you were going to London every 24 months, then there was anticipation. Doing it every year, it just becomes stale, and it becomes just like everything else you do. It's just run-of-the-mill. You don't want to do that. And you got to build up this stuff. And you can't do it 2 weeks in advance. That's not going to do it. That's why people got frustrated with WWE and Vince. He started doing that every 3 weeks, and that didn't work. And it's not what people want. That's not how good wrestling is done.
Yeah, I mean, going back next year is setting themselves potentially up to look like a company on the downturn. That, you know, repeat visits do worse by a considerable amount, not better. They did put on, you know, a really good show, and they have, a you know, 11 months to get themselves in a good spot. Joel, what do you think about going back to Wembley 1 year later? I mean, in a way, I get it's tempting not to. It was a big moneymaker for them. And then number two, what do you think of the cable TV streaming landscape in terms of AEW options? I mean, Tony Khan is, I think, savvy enough that he's going to know that he needs to have, you know, one or two other viable options to get a good deal out of Warner Media. Warner doesn't want to lose 52 weeks of 5 hours of programming on their main cable channels at a time when you've got to have value to cable companies to get the carriage fees, not to mention the ad revenue. And it's just hard to find that level of programming. I mean, WWE is touting that, you know, and they're talking about, I think it was Nick Khan, but could have been somebody with Endeavor, saying, you know, hey, we have value because we're this unicorn in that we provide year-round, year-after-year programming. And I've been saying that for years. You know, that's the value of wrestling compared to other programs, is it's not a 12-week series or a one-off movie or an every 4 years Olympics or a once-a-year tennis tournament or twice-a-year, you know, golf tournament. I mean, it's like it's every week you can rely on it drawing a big crowd. And demographically, AEW's one of the top few shows on cable the nights that they're on, even with the lower viewership. And when you add the 7-day viewership in, Dynamite is almost every week drawing more than 1 million viewers. So there's a lot of positives to what they're doing in a landscape where, I mean, yes, point, you know, something rating compared to a, you know, the 3-point somethings from, you know, 8 years ago that WWE was drawing, it feels very different. But we are in a different world right now when it comes to that. Joel, your thoughts on both those topics?
Yeah, as far as for All In, I mean, I like your idea, Joe, of even trying to do something every other year. But, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, where they would be 2 years from now, let alone just 1 year from now, where the company is going to be. But and I can't predict what the attendance is going to be like, what the anticipation for that show is going to be like. But your point is the same, is that you want to build anticipation to these shows. And right now it just kind of feels like they are filling out cards. They're filling out the content by giving you exciting matches. You know, they're always looking for the 4-star plus match, and they're doing a good job, you know, of filling those out, but it's not resulting in the better business, because the business is on the front end. You know, how excited are people to go and spend the money to either, you know, buy that pay-per-view or go travel to that event and spend tons of money to where you're going to go to all the fan fests, you're going to go to all the buy all the merchandise, all the exclusive stuff from that. You're really going to be bought and immersed, where you're going to be spending more than just the $50 watching it from home. And I think, and as far as the other topic, I think that Tony is very savvy and understands, you know, the lifeblood of AEW to move forward is to have a platform where people can access that show, and not just for people who are actively seeking it out, but those where he can get new viewers and get a new audience to that. And right now, I mean, that is still television is the way to be profitable and to reach some new people. But I agree that I don't think that he's going to get, you know, I don't know how much money he thinks he's going to get from it, but it's certainly not going to be a WWE type of deal. I just don't think that AEW is that strong of a brand. But I agree with that. Wrestling is unique, that it's something that you can do year round. There's a lot of other things that you can spin off from wrestling, which they've done. You can do a lot of reality TV show. There's a lot of side content that you can do with it as well. You know, and so I don't know what the backup plan would be. I don't know, you know, what other networks that would be out there that would be wanting to have AEW. I tend to think that Warner Brothers seems like they are behind this brand. They haven't really given an indication that they're not. You know, the one thing was that they I guess the technology wasn't ready for All In to be on Max yet. I mean, which is puzzling to me. You know, given that they have so many smart people working on these different streaming platforms. But you know, I don't forget to say it.
That should be interjected in this. If Tony's like, we're going to do it next year, but All In's going to be on Max, and the pay per view is going to be All Out. It does change the dynamic in several, you know, in some key ways. because you can have a large audience for All In and use it as a selling point for All Out, and then you don't have the CM Punk firing and the augmented pace of the MJF Cole storyline working against you also. So those are some things that can do, but it doesn't change the fact that you are then going to do angles at a show on a Sunday with one Dynamite and one Collision available to promote a $50 purchase 7 days later. And that problem still exists regardless of whether All In is a pay-per-view or not. You still have the crunch timeline. And so do you make the two shows, you know, do you differentiate them from each other and announce both lineups at a time, or do you decide, no, we're going to use All In to help promote All Out and we're just going to live with it because it's not a pay-per-view. So go ahead, Joel.
Yeah. And I mean, and you're trying to draw tens of thousands of people to go back to Wembley Stadium, you know, instead of picking a smaller venue. So it's just such a difficult task to do next time. I mean, you've done it once and they surpassed all expectations, but to now try and do it again. I mean, yeah, I know that their phrase is double or nothing, right? That you're trying to do to maximize that again, but you know, it's going to be a difficult task. And I think that one of the things that we've learned as fans and what people want is that we want to know the matches ahead of time. You know, people do not want to know just find out, you know, the week before or find out the night of the show. People want to be able to anticipate that stuff. And that gives people more, that allows people to build anticipation, to think about the different outcomes and possibilities of those matches more so than just being surprised. And so, I mean, if this is the way that he's doing it next year, and hopefully, you know, it's not asking people to pay $50 2 weeks in a row for it, you know, hopefully that they find a way where they can promote matches ahead of time so that it makes sense, and then that All In is not just a show that's built on angles. You know, if you're trying to draw that many people, you're going to want to have big matchups. But next year, they're going to have to do a much better job, whereas this year they want that to very much be a standalone show, you know, celebrating the success of the company, celebrating the success of selling so many tickets, the highest paid attendance. You're going to have to find whatever that balance is of also promoting that all-out show to get people excited about that and anticipate those matches.
Joe, anything else you want to add?
No, that's about it. Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. Great. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Yep, you too. Our number is 347-215-8558. Feel free to give us a call if you're interested in joining the conversation. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Up next is David Bryant, PW Torch contributor from North Carolina. David, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hi. I wanted to respond to the people that are calling in about the problems with the AEW and the ratings that they're suffering from. I don't think there's anything magical about the 1 million point mark. I think they have to hit that, but I do think that if you look at the ticket sales, look at the buy rates, I saw a report that it might have been as low as like something like 73,000, 70-something thousand for All Out. If you look at the macro sense, that there is a problem. But I don't think the antidotes that are always being suggested are the right ones, not that mine necessarily are, but like I don't think they need to change up the titles. MJF and Adam Page are one of the few things that are working for them, and you don't fix a broken engine by slashing your tires. If you step back and you really look at it, what works with MJF and Page and what nearly every other corner of the promotion is missing are compelling, long-term, thought-out storylines. Wrestling is about storylines. If we wanted hyper-realistic and true-to-life sports atmospheres, you know, we watch at UFC. Wrestlers are the theater kids of actors. And of athletes, the theater kids of athletes, and you should capitalize on that. Like, think about it this way: every modern wrestling boom has revolved around booming storylines. Austin McMahon, the Bloodline, and AEW—they don't need to hire new people, new characters. They don't need to change which of these people or characters are holding rich props right now. The problem isn't the characters. Characters don't sell products in and of themselves. You know, I learned some of that when I went to college and I learned about writing. You know, you can have a strong character and it's wonderful, but it's only as strong as the storyline you have for the character, because characters don't sell products. At the end of the day, it's not the characters, it's the stories they tell. And that my advice would be, you know, AEW gets to do what no other sport gets to do. They get to determine the outcome. So use that to their advantage. Put on matches where the outcomes are blatantly obvious. Just because the star ratings hit the roof, you know, that's great. But you should be putting on matches that will make the fans hit the roof. And if they will invest in this long term, I truly think that's what will pay off.
Joel, what do you think about David's perspective there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as far as like the characters aspect of that, is that you always want to be building new stars, you know, and we talked about earlier is that, you know, a lot of these guys that they built the company around, the elite characters in particular, and some of the, you know, some guys like Moxley too, where they put on, you know, great performances and they're always good. They're over with the crowd, but you need people who are hungry, and you need people, you need new stars, you know, where it's not just the same thing seeing over and over and over again, where we're seeing the same thing with like New Japan is that they have a lot of the same similar stars, and now they're going through this growth period of trying to build some new people there, and you know, hopefully they can get some of those new stars to resonate, and that can help to get them to that next level of where they want to be. You know, I think, and also, yes, you want to have the great storylines, but I mean, if I were to just pick one thing to change about AEW that I think would help, would be is eliminating the ROH brand, eliminating those championships with it, so that your one main focus is the AEW championships. You don't have it mucked up with these other championships, because I feel like it dilutes that stuff to what you're talking about with these stories, right? And these stories should revolve around winning the championships and having that feeling like a big deal, other than just being these shiny props. And I feel that by having less of those, having less of everybody carrying around a belt, I mean, it's ridiculous at times how many people are just carrying around a belt that they just don't mean as much. Whereas if you make that the central goal that everybody's going towards, I mean, it's just going to make everything feel more important on that show.
David, back to you.
I agree with that. I agree. I wrote a column for the Torch a while back about, you know, AEW Dynamite. No, I think it was called ROH Dynamite. And
yep.
If you look at where a lot of the ratings kind of dropped off, it seems like the first mm-hmm. big drop happened in that period between Revolution 2022 and the first Forbidden Door pay-per-view. And mm-hmm. during that time, if you look at what they were doing, they were pushing ROH, and they were pushing new wrestlers from New Japan to the audience who didn't really know those people's stories. They were able to see that they were very athletic. They were able to see, oh, these guys, they are so athletic. But like much like ballet is athletic and figure skating is athletic, wrestling is athletic too, but it's also entertainment. It's athletic entertainment, and they've already wowed us with their athleticism. They've been doing that since they started. You know, people want, now that they know how good they are at that, we want to be wowed by the entertainment. And there's what we learned as a kid from our mothers reading us bedtime stories is that there's nothing more entertaining than a really good story. And I agree with you and your co-host are saying that there are too many props, and you can lose track of it. You don't want your story so complicated that the person watching it and just tuning in goes, I don't know where to start for this, I'm lost. You want the person that's flipping the channels and tunes into it, even if it's more complicated at a deeper level than what they're seeing at first, you want them to be able to easily understand what they've flipped over to and what they've landed on while changing the channel. Otherwise, they're just going to be confused and keeps channel surfing.
Do you agree with me, David, that the Ibushi Omega storyline has not been, or the relationship has not developed into a full-fledged storyline for a lot of viewers? They're, you know, who is Ibushi? Why should they care? What's the background of Kenny? There's a vague notion that there's some past with them. But again, you're expecting people to do homework, or even if they do homework, be invested in something where the story hasn't been told for the actual fans watching on TBS on Wednesdays.
I 100% agree with that. I 100% agree with it. I think it's absolutely plagued more than just that aspect of the whole Kenny Don Callis storyline. I don't think we ever got a really good, compelling reason why Don Callis gave up the Golden Goose. Like, I don't think we ever, you know, meant for so much. I remember when Kenny was injured and he cut a promo about how it was the fans' fault that Kenny was injured because we wanted just one more five-star match. He didn't give up on Kenny Omega when he was injured for a year, but just randomly decided to. That was such a great opportunity, especially when people were booing Don Callis out of the building. I mean, they were booing him like he was Dominic. There was a visceral hate pouring out of my television set like it was the girl from The Ring coming to kill me. And they kind of squandered it. Because what Don Callis did was he got up and cut a promo in which he gave us a non-answer for why he betrayed Kenny Omega. And then next week they had him come back out to cut another promo, and I thought, okay, maybe he forgot his lines last week. They're going to set the record straight. What was the reason? And it's like he just re-ran the last promo. It's like he just said the last thing he said, but again, with no definitive answer, and now Chris Jericho is involved for some reason. And I don't know what to make of it. And I follow the product so closely, I literally write a column on it every week. I can't imagine what a casual fan is thinking.
Yeah. David, anything else you want to add? We've got do have our outside correspondent who's called in now and is on hold. But anything else you want to speak in before we go?
That's all. I'd like people to check out. I wrote a column about CM Punk's firing this week. Please check that out. Please check out my hits and misses columns. Thank you guys for having me on the show, and thank you to everyone who reads the Torch. I really appreciate the people who read my stuff, the people who read Wade's, everyone's stuff. I know your time is valuable. I appreciate you spending it with us, and I appreciate all that you guys do at the Torch too, right? Thank you.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it. His column on CM Punk was excellent. It's a pretty long column, but covered a lot of territory and a lot of positive feedback on it. You can just click the opinion section in our menu, and you'll find it, you know, among the first 3, 4, 5 articles in the listing, either on mobile or desktop at pwtorch.com. And definitely check out his collision column. Sometimes his analysis of the show covers 7 out of 9 topics that I didn't write about or comment on. Like And that's neither good nor bad. It's like it's a very different approach to or his what he sees and what he analyzes is something that when I read it, I don't feel like I'm reading something that I could have written. And I love that about the work that he does. He makes me look at things differently or look at things more closer. So check out his hits and misses column covering collision every week at pwtorch.com too. Got a lot of good writers. David, right there with everybody that I am willing to and eager to tout. All right, let's go to our on-site correspondent who attended in Cincinnati tonight, including the Rampage tapings. Jason, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in and taking time out of your busy evening to share some stories with us from in the arena.
Hey, what's up, Wade? Glad to be on.
Yeah, great to have you. So I know in your email, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, attendance way down. You've gone to every AEW show in Cincinnati. Are we at 4 now? Is that right?
Yeah, 4, and I went to the one in Dayton as well and the house shows when they were in Troy, Ohio, the very first one.
Has attendance dropped every time they've gone to Cincinnati, or has it been kind of up and down, but this is the lowest?
It's went down every time. The first one was the the first Dynamite that CM Punk was on after he fought Darby Allin. And that was actually at the University of Cincinnati Bearcats where they play. And then, then it was at Heritage Bank the last couple times, but it has been way down. I think WrestleTix said 2,500. I didn't even think there was that many people in there.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's just it's not good. Yeah, the update 7 hours ago was tickets distributed 2,336. They only set up 2,800 for the building. Last time they were there, October 18th, 2022, they drew 4,740. So, you know, maybe half the crowd. I mean, probably a little better than half, but once all walk-ups are taken care of. But not good. And WrestleTick says it'll rank among the lowest TV audiences of the year for the company, or the lowest attendances for a TV event for the company, the lowest being in Saskatchewan, 2,400, and Kingston, Rhode Island, 2,700. But, wow. Yeah, and they had some buy one, get one free offers, so it's not like the people there paid premium prices also.
Well, that's what made me mad. I bought my tickets like about a month ago, and then I looked last night to see if they have maybe like a parking pass or something I could get, and I went and looked on Ticketmaster. They didn't, and then I saw the ticket right by me that I paid, I think I paid $100 for two for me and my son. They had them for like $14 and buy one, get one free, and the four seat tickets were going for like $20, buy one, get one free.
Wow.
And like the last three or four rows on the floor were nobody were in the chairs.
Yeah, I saw a picture of online where basically the whole hard camera side was blocked off, and the back of the arena facing the stage was entirely blocked off.
Even seats around me were
empty. It looked pretty empty. Yeah,
even seats around me were empty. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
They filmed it pretty well, Joel, didn't they? I mean,
that was in my comments. They were creative in the way that they had to film it, but there was times where they were, you know, they had that kind of corner shot where you could still see the back of the arena that was totally darkened off.
Jason, talk about the reaction for Moxley now compared to in the past. And, you know, I know Cincinnati's not the most objective place to judge how he's doing, but do you watch him perform in the opener on Dynamite and the crowd reaction and all that and think, okay, he's someone they should consider pushing to the top again, or do you like him in that kind of sidebar main event role of, you know, I don't know, even know what to describe him, but not necessarily a guy always in the world title picture. Talk about the evolution of Moxie in Cincinnati and your thoughts in general on him after watching him in person tonight.
Yeah, of course, in Cincinnati he's loved. I mean, I thought the crowd reaction was pretty crazy for him. The one thing that I did notice different this time around, like last time that they came to Heritage Bank, he was doing like interviews and on like ESPN shows and things like that, like local ESPN shows, and they did none of that this time at all.
There was
no promotion at all, and I didn't even like see billboards or like heard any commercials saying Dynamite was coming or anything like that. But I thought the crowd was really into Moxley when he got there. My 10-year-old son went with me. We ended up buying a Moxley action figure, and he was going pretty crazy when Moxley went out. So, I mean, that was pretty cool.
That's nice. We haven't talked much about Jericho and Sammy Guevara. I want to switch to that for a minute. And tell me how they held the audience's attention, if they did, if they didn't, or they did for a while and then didn't, or, you know, whatever. And then also just the crowd reaction to both of them. Because, you know, when we've been talking on the show about, you know, I think AEW would benefit from not having so many people in ambiguous positions where you don't know who they're going to side with, who they're aligned with, who's good, who's bad, who's being deceptive, who's being sincere. There's a lot of that going on, and it's kind of part of the baked into the Jericho Guevara situation too. Talk about the reaction in the building to them and your thoughts on that.
I thought it was kind of lukewarm. Jericho, everybody loves singing the Judas song, which I still don't understand if he's a heel, but of course everybody loves singing that. I think Sammy Guevara towards the end, when he talked about how much he wanted to fight Jericho, kind of got some oohs and ahs from the audience. But I don't think it was anything that would, like, sell a pay-per-view. I know they're going to be on Grand Slam next week. But it was mostly just people reacting to how they were barbing at each other. But I don't think it was very loud reactions at all.
Joel, do you want to jump in with a question for Jason?
Yeah, so just curious for the women's match between Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida, Nyla Rose, Toni Storm, what was the reaction like for each of them? I mean, was Toni Storm, I mean, a lot of people have started to gravitate towards her character because she's starting to do something different. She's starting to have kind of her own character. But out of all those, I mean, who did seem like the crowd was really most behind?
It seemed like Shida got a lot of cheers, and a lot of people were chanting Shida. Britt Baker, of course, everybody loves to do the DMD, but not as much as usual. And then I thought Toni got a pretty good reaction when she got the pin. But it seemed for the most part that a lot of people wanted Shida to win, especially in the section I was at. A lot of Shida chants were going on. I don't know if you could hear them on the TV or not, but a lot of people were rooting for Shida to win.
Interesting.
Yeah. Joel, anything else you want to ask?
Yeah. Yeah, was there anything that really surprised you about, like, as far as the fan reactions compared to past years or past times that you've been at the AEW shows in Ohio?
Yeah, this time they opened the doors at 6:30, which I think last time we went, they opened up at 6. But they started like or matches only for Cincinnati at 7:30, and the first match was Brandon Cutler and Colt Cabana, which they actually got they were a tag team versus QTV, and Colt Cabana actually got a really good pop, which I couldn't believe. And even though they lost to Johnny TV or whatever he's called now, but a lot of people were digging with there. They were doing a lot of crazy shenanigans in the, like, Colt was recording the whole thing. It was really weird, but people loved it. And then, of course, Bryan Danielson, when he came out, I thought the Yes chance that was when he came out was pretty crazy. A lot of people didn't know he ran out at first, and then all of a sudden the Yes chant started, and that was pretty cool.
Talk about the reaction for Samoa Joe and Roderick Strong. Did fans buy Roderick Strong as a threat to Joe? Were they into him? You know, kind of in a way, maybe fans were into Dominic. We know he's not a top guy, but it's fun to boo him. Yeah. Talk about that, Jason.
Yeah, sorry. I think my Bluetooth cut off. Yeah, a lot of people were cheering for Joe. A few people were making fun of Roderick's neck, which they did an angle for that on Rampage, which I guess I'll talk about that when we get to that. But a lot of people were talking about his neck. But it was mostly just a whole bunch of Joe's been killing. I don't understand if he's supposed to be a good guy or a bad guy. But he did get booed at the end. Well, actually, he got cheered at the end when he choked out Adam Cole, which I'm like, Adam Cole's one of your biggest baby faces. I don't know what purpose that gave, because I couldn't believe the main event ended with like 8 minutes to go. I'm like, well, something has to happen. There's still 8 minutes of TV time. What's going to happen? And then you really couldn't see what was going on. I could see that the Kingdom and Adam Cole were like yelling at each other, and I don't know if they were putting Roddy on a stretcher or whatnot, but then you saw Joe come out and choke out Adam, so that was pretty, and that got a big reaction. That might have got one of the biggest reactions of the night. And I'm like, why are people? But I thought the crowd throughout the night was all right. Like I said, I don't know how it came across on TV. I'll watch it back later, but it was kind of disappointing because there was no MJF, no Adam Cole, no Kenny Omega. The Young Bucks did that run in during the Hangman match, which he got a pretty good a reception. I forgot about that, but. Was kind of bummed to see the Hangman or the Buckshot Lariat, and that he won with his Tombstone Piledriver.
Rank who is most over tonight? Who got the biggest reactions? And I'm curious where Hangman Page fits into that list.
I think it was Moxley and then Daniel Bryan and then Joe and then probably Hangman.
Okay. Yep.
Darby. I might put Darby in front of Hangman. Just because that match wasn't advertised.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Was there anything off air before we get to Rampage with like Tony Khan or anything else worth noting?
Tony Khan came out and did his little 2 minute. It's the same speech every time I go, like how great of a town we are. thank everybody for being there. We're going to have a great show. Stay tuned for stay tuned for Rampage. It's going to be a great Rampage. And, you know, the Tony Khan, let's go chant. I know you guys always ask about this, the merchandise. There wasn't really a whole lot. There was some Adam Cole shirts, some MJF shirts, the AEW shirts. You could buy some replica belts if you had $900, but.
Yeah, I don't.
Which I wish I did, but I don't have. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll give Joel, is there anything else from Dynamite you want to ask Jason?
No, not that I can think
of. Okay. So let's shift to you telling us about Rampage. This is a spoiler warning for anyone who wants to be surprised by Statlander, Jade Cargill in particular, and anything else that happened on Rampage. You can all fast forward a few minutes. We're going to get to some emails before wrapping up here after we talk to Jason. So you can fast forward maybe 5 minutes and you shouldn't miss all the spoilers. Jason, fill us in on Rampage.
I'll start with the main event last. I mean, there was 5 matches on Rampage, I did not think there would be that many, but Chris Statlander beat Jade Cargill clean. Jade looked really good, had a lot of offense early, and then Chris made her comeback and did her finisher and got the pin, 1-2-3.
Yeah.
And then they shook hands in the middle of the ring, and that was it. I was kind of surprised by
that.
I am surprised, too. I mean,
no angle for a follow-up or anything like that?
Nothing unless they...
Wow.
Like, we left as soon as the match was over and they shook hands because I figured that would be it. Like, the only shenanigans in the match was Mark Sterling got up on the ramp once, but that was it, to get the referee's attention, and that was it. Otherwise than that, Jade looked really good, better than I thought she had before. And then, like I said, Chris made the comeback and got the clean victory. There was no interference or anything. I was very surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to the match. I want to see Jade looking good in there. And I want to get a sense, too, of the commentary, because that's going to tell us something. You know, you only get so much out of spoilers when you're sitting in the arena. You don't hear how the announcers are framing things. And I am curious how they're going to frame Jade coming out and after her loss, what kind of story they're telling. I hope there's a story that they have in mind, and they don't just go, well, that was a surprise. Now let's plug Collision. Because Jade losing should be a big, big pivot point for her journey.
Well, or do you think maybe she's finishing up? You know, because there was rumors of her maybe not coming back at all, and it was kind of surprising when she made the comeback. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a possibility.
Well, I read an interview during the week. I think she said that she would never work anywhere else but AEW, and that how much she was praising Tony Khan. I don't know. She came out, when she first came out, she kind of came out as a face because her husband, Brandon Phillips, former Cincinnati Reds baseball player, and Mark Sterling was holding his jersey. So she kind of got a cheer for that, but then during the match, she, like, flicked off a guy's hat and then got the crowd kind of booing her a little bit. By this time, though, this was, like, almost 4 hours in. There was only about 1,000 people in the building, so I'm kind of interested to hear how the crowd sounds for that. There was a squash match. Aussie Open beat, I forget who it was. It was a couple of ROH guys, but they beat him in, like, 45 seconds. The first match was the Lucha Brothers and the Hardy Boys versus Blade and the Butcher. My voice was shot in the match. But during the match, towards the end, Jeff Jarrett. It was Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and the Blade and the Butcher versus the Hardys and Lucha Brothers. Towards the end of the match, the Righteous came out and dragged the Hardy Boys up the ramp. But then the Lucha Brothers still got the pinfall. But it was a pretty good match. But a lot of play into the crowd. The Kingdom won. They beat Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal. And then after they won, they cut a promo in the ring saying that this month is neck pain appreciation month or something like neck awareness appreciation month. And they were wearing bracelets on their arms. And they cut a little weird promo. Like Mike Bennett said, if you ask somebody if they know about neck prevention and they say no, you punch them in the junk and then give them a pile driver and then you run away. And it was really weird. But they said they had to get back to Roddy, that he was suffering in the hospital. But it was really weird. It was,
okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's really about all the big things that happened on Rampage. It was just weird there were so many matches. I know I'm forgetting one. I can't think about who it is at the moment. But it wasn't like, you know, that you have to watch.
Let me see. What did they advertise?
It was the Acclaimed. I'm sorry.
There
it
is.
The Acclaimed.
Yep.
The Acclaimed.
Yep. And Billy.
Who did they wrestle? They won quickly.
That they did not.
Yeah, they won, and then the Dark Order came out and said they want a trio shot. But then Bowen said, well, let's make this a job interview. Tell me why I should give you a title shot. And the Dark Order rambled on for a little bit. But tomorrow night, they said tomorrow night. But on Collision, it's going to be Anthony Bowens against one of the Dark Order. The Dark Order win. They get a trio title shot.
Excellent. Jason, is there anything else you want to add about your experience at the building tonight?
Like I said, I was just really disappointed in the crowd. I mean, my 10-year-old had a great time. He loved it. But the crowd was just really, I cannot believe how bad it was. We got in and out, which usually doesn't happen. But I thought for the most part the crowd stayed with it. I couldn't hear the Don Callis interview. He probably got the most heat because people were just booing the whole time. I don't know what he said at all, so I'm going to have to watch it. Only thing I know is he had a painting with who was it? Was it Ibushi?
Yeah, Ibushi was getting stabbed by Takeshita.
Yeah, but I didn't hear a word he said. He got so much.
Interesting.
Everybody was booing him the whole time, so I don't know what he said. But overall, I had a great time. I love AEW. I just wish – I love great wrestling, but there's, like, no stories at all. And none of the big guys were hardly there, which kind of makes it rough, but I can kind of see why their ratings are what they are.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jason, thanks so much for calling in. Call in anytime, not just when you attend, but especially if you go to a show again.
Okay, will do. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Great job by Jason there. If you want to be an on-site correspondent and you want to try to follow Jason and the great job he just did, drop us a line if you're attending a future AEW or WWE event. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. Put the date and the city in the subject line if you think about it. That helps me stay a little organized. All right, let's wrap up with some rapid-fire email comments here, Joel. I want to begin with Zahn from St. Louis. What do you think about the team of 2.0? I guess Menard and Parker. They fit their role as a mid-card heel team well, but I think Tony Khan could give them a serious push like he did with Austin and Colton Gunn. Yeah, they seem a little lost right now. I don't know if they're just sort of biding their time until, you know, the Jericho Guevara thing shakes out, or if they're just kind of going to be on their own and back in sort of the NXT role is just sort of a you know, good hands who lose. Joel, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I just have never seemed to be as big of a fan of 2.0 as other people have. I mean, it's always seemed to me that, Matt Menard has always been kind of like the parody of the independent wrestler with the, you know, the shaking in the promo, the shouting, the smacking of the gum stuff. I mean, he's good at what he does with
kind
that.
Kind of,
but
he's a little bit like Nasty Boy Knobs.
Yeah, it's like that. But, I mean, it almost makes me think of like 2000s, like, indie wrestler type thing. But yeah, definitely I can see the Knobs comparison there. I think that they're both good hands, but I just have never seen them at that level that it seems that other people do.
Number two, it's incredible how big Bill turned around his career over the past 3 years. I remember when people were just thinking of him as Enzo's big buddy and nothing mm-hmm. more, and the troubles that came with him following his WWE exit. I mean, Moxley, it mentioned on commentary, Moxley and Big Bill used to be roommates. And good friends. Moxley gave him a lot. I don't know how long the Starksville relationship will last, but, you know, I've been an advocate for Big Bill, one, having a better name. I don't know if it's too late for that. But he does seem talented enough and to have enough of a presence that even if in behind the scenes they're like, oh, but there's this about him and that about him, like, try to get as much out of him as you can. And maybe you get a lot more than you expect. There's not a ton of big guys who have that kind of bravado to them, and he has it. Mm-hmm. I think he has progressed. I'm not forecasting him being a world title challenger or champion at that level, but boy, I think you can get more. They're getting a lot out of him right now compared to, as Zahn is saying, you know, maybe your expectations, but I still think if they did a little bit more with this character and let us know a little bit more about him, they could do more. Joel, you seem to be nodding along.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought about Big Bill, is that he's different from some of the other big guys where they're just kind of the big monster that grabs you by the forehead and tosses you across the ring. I mean, Big Bill just has that different kind of swagger about him. He's got this kind of coolness about him that's really different from a lot of the big men that you see in wrestling nowadays. And I think that he's found a way to kind of harness that, and just pairing with Ricky Starks really works well for that, where it's kind of like that, you know, just that Kevin Nash kind of swag of it, you know, where it's like mm-hmm. sometimes you feel like you're too cool for school instead of just the big monster dude who's going to come and plow you over, you know, and I think that really stands out in today's wrestling.
Zahn also says, watching the backstage segment between Hook and Orange Cassidy, I thought it was amazing these guys are as over as they are while barely talking. What do you think about Orange and Hook? I mean, that was like one of the longer sentences Hook's ever said. And Orange Cassidy is kind of back to being, you know, not mopey, but what's the word? Chill, I guess. what do you think?
He's tired. Yeah, and I liked where they had gone with Orange Cassidy, you know, at All Out, and then the follow-up to this, to All Out, you know, last week when he kicked off the show. You know, and then this was obviously a lot less. I mean, you know, the guy's been working so much and doing so many, you know, high-level matches that, yeah, I don't blame him for being tired, but they're trying to get him to do a little bit more talking, and I just felt like this was a little bit more of a step backwards than step forwards for him, where I felt like last week was, you know, he's still the Orange Cassidy character. He's still true to that, just like MJF being the babyface, but you're a scumbag, where they're still true to that core that got them over, but I feel like that there's a way to advance that character, and I would have liked to have seen Orange Cassidy, you know, continue on the stride of being more of a developed character than the guy who's just kind of nonchalant and just kind of saying, you know, one or a few words.
And as I just close by saying, I think Taz did a good job tonight explaining the next stuff. Taz definitely can speak to that. Any thoughts on that, Joel?
What specifically about the next?
I think the Roderick Strong especially. Playing into that and, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek at times.
Yeah. I mean, Taz is really good at, you know, finding those little niche things to talk about, and especially how it relates back to his experience and his wrestling career. That, you know, I think that stuff works well.
James in Clemson lost a signal earlier, but he did email his follow-up question. He goes, I just want to say that I know more about Nick Wayne than the Young Bucks. Neither act has cut a single promo in the company's existence, yet I know more about Nick Wayne's character and who he is than I know about the Young Bucks. Why do you think that is? Joel, chime in on the Bucks and, you know, their character development and, yeah, their presentation, and if AW is getting the most out of them, if they seem engaged but insecure and they don't want to do a lot of talking segments. What's going on with them? What's your framing and thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, the Young Bucks, I mean, they went from, you know, it's again leaning on, you know, having all this previous knowledge and being one of the original people who followed a lot of these wrestlers, you know, from New Japan and the other promotions to the formation of AEW. You know, it relies heavily upon a lot of that, where the Young Bucks were, you know, they were the gold standard in the independents, you know, back in 2017, 2018, even before that, with their stuff in Ring of Honor, where these were some really hungry guys, and you got to know them, you know, in their family life, especially if you watch a lot of the Being the Elite stuff, where, you know, if you have all that previous knowledge, you know a ton about them, you know, and a lot of that story has been told, you know, from them building their wrestling rings and wanting to do this their whole lives, and how they're, you know, big family men, all that stuff. And now that, you know, that they've gotten to this position in building a new company and they've gotten paid well and, you know, they've had their great matches, they've had some of the greatest matches, you know, greatest rated matches of all time, you know, they're pretty comfortable with what they're doing. And it just, as you mentioned before, that it's I don't think it's like a lack of – I think they're always motivated to put on great matches because they continue to do so. I think that's something that they're really you know, that they really enjoy – you know, going out there and doing all their athletic stuff and being over with the crowd, but they just lack that type of hunger where it's like they've kind of been there, done that, that it's kind of like, what is the next big thing for them to do and to conquer? And I mean, really, after All In, I don't think that there's much more for them to accomplish, you know, in their careers. And I want to see them keep doing something, but definitely there needs to be another evolution. And they tried to do that by creating the different kind of characters where they were just more kind of the indie guys before and just kind of, you know, riding the hard work and the super kicks was most of their personalities. And they kind of changed that as Kenny turned heel. But really, I mean, they just need another evolution. And I think that what we're seeing with the Elite, that Kenny is in a good spot right now with the stuff that's going on with Don Callis and Takeshita. But I mean, there needs to be something different for the Young Bucks and Hangman, and they need to be put in a position where they're really identifying, you know, talent who hasn't been higher up on the card, and they're put in positions to really get those guys over and be in a position not to just take a bunch of losses, but to find out how they can get other guys over and put other people in those top positions.
All right, JB from Detroit says, it looks like they're building to Golden Lovers versus Takeshita Mystery Callis Family Member tag match, likely for WrestleDream. My question is, will be the newest Callis Family Member to team with Takeshita against the Golden Lovers? And he also says, do you think a potential Jericho Rabbit Grand Slam can actually propel Sammy's singles career? Those two might be related. You know, if I mean, the Jericho-Sammy storyline has more than tangentially to do with Don Callis.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that match. We had Callis interacting with Danny Garcia, who was touting his dance. I want to get your thoughts on that too, if the dance is killing Garcia as a serious person, even if it's going viral or if it's a niche that he should lean into. So yeah, just a lot of things are for you to react to.
Yeah, I mean the Daniel Garcia thing. I mean, I'd like to see him more of as a serious character, but he found something that worked for him, you know, and it got him over, and it's something that's fun. People like to do. It's going viral, you know. It helps get his name out there that way. But I feel like as a serious wrestling character, you know, he's going to have to move on from being the 2000s boy band. You know, he's going to have to find something different whenever that time comes. But I mean, I has not gone unnoticed that Don Callis continues to bring up Chris Jericho and his friendship with Chris Jericho, or his ended 34-year friendship with Chris Jericho, that, you know, it definitely makes me suspicious. You know, is there going to be something where Don tries to recruit Sammy Guevara? I mean, Sammy feels kind of weird being in the Don Callis family, but certainly, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and Don keeps bringing that up. And, you know, after that promo today where it's not, you know, it's not just somebody turning on one another. That's what I really liked about Guevara and Jericho, is that it's not just somebody suddenly turns on somebody. It's like they told the story there that's been going on for since the beginning of Dynamite, that they've been friends, and it's a believable story. They talked about NWA 70, you know, spotting him, bringing him into the promotion. It's not stabbing his back and attacking him from behind. It's like, yeah, we'll see who the better man is, and you know, we'll find out what happens next week, you know, leading to that intrigue of what's going to happen next, other than just telegraphing a turn and then, you know, just leading to a match from there. So I think that there's a possibility, definitely, of Don, you know, linking up with Sammy Guevara, but it certainly does feel like a odd pairing to bring those two together. But, you know, I think that Jericho has really done a good job to get Sammy to another level. I mean, he feels like this is the biggest moment of his career. You know, it's the biggest singles match that I think that he's ever had. So the follow-up is going to be key with this. But, you know, I don't know who else Don is particularly looking for, but I've always thought that there's a possibility too of seeing, you know, he just said that that Takeshita is now the Alpha, and that's going to be his nickname. And I've always thought that there was a possibility of teaming up Kenny and Jericho at some point, that I feel like that would be an interesting pairing as well, to see what you could get out of that.
JB also says, do you think that next week Darby's choice to regularly team with Sting at big events like All In and Grand Slam will lead to Nick Wayne's seemingly impending heel turn, as Wayne would be jealous of this? And if this happens, do you think that it would be close to what AR Fox and whatever happened there with his face to heel back to face turn a few weeks ago that was closely tied to Darby and Wayne too? I could see Nick Wayne resenting that Darby forgave AR Fox so quickly, but you know, you can't have Nick Wayne align with people who attacked him and besmirched his dad and all that. And I don't know if it, I mean, Dominic Sahia, they might be, the young kid who's in over his head, let's have him go heel and have fans boom really loud. I mean, I guess I could see that. I've heard some other people, you know, speculate about Nick Wayne being heel and if he might be, you know, that punk ass 18-year-old brat. And they might try to do something like that. Has that crossed your mind? What do you think of it, Joel?
I mean, right now in the presentation and what I've seen of Nick Wayne, it's just hard to imagine him in that role. You know, yeah. I think that he's capable of doing it, but it's just hard to imagine that because we've seen him as such this kind of white meat baby face, you know, such a young guy at 18 years old. And I just don't think that – I don't see, you know, Darby Allin turning heel. He could – try to do it, but I just don't think that fans would be wanting to boo him. But yeah, for Nick Wayne, it's just something I haven't seen yet. You know, the presentation of him has just been so babyface that, it's possible.
Yeah. Joel, anything else you want to mention before we wrap up here?
I don't think so. Cool. You know, good show. I'm glad that this was not a repeat of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was awful.
Yes, for sure. Joel, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to AEW with you.
Yeah, Wade, this is a privilege to be able to talk with you about this stuff. I mean, it's honestly, to be able to talk wrestling and speculate on AEW from the beginning of its existence, it's honestly a privilege. I really appreciate being able to talk about this stuff with you.
Awesome. Thank you for the kind words. Thanks to our listeners, our callers, our emailers, our on-site correspondent, Jason. And we will talk to all of you next time, which on the post show will be after SmackDown on Friday.